Stanislav Knapibnik, who is a former US Army officer and also a dual US and Russian citizen, now lives in Moscow, has extensive commercial experience, was the director of supply chain for Halliburton for Eurasia. So he's well placed to talk about both economic issues, military issues, and all kind of stuff in between. Stas, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you. Always a pleasure.
So up until about 2 weeks ago, I spent all my time seemingly talking about Russia and Ukraine. Now I spent all my time talking about the situation in Iran. Obviously, this is a complete shit show, you know, from the US, you know, point of view. How is it playing out in terms of coverage and what people are talking about in Russia?
Well, there's a lot of coverage, obviously, because of what's going on and Russia's strategic relationship with Iran. And yes, of course, Russia is supporting Iran, which was a shock to the Americans. How dare the Russians proxy us through Iran? I don't know. You've been proxying us through Ukraine for 4 years. Payback's a mother. Surprise. It's shocking if they didn't figure that was going to happen. But I don't think they figured a lot of things that are going to happen. Trump is now, as of today, or at least yesterday for America, Trump has now forbidden any satellite imagery of what's going on with a two-week delay, so to cover up all the damage, which thankfully there's, you know, such things as Russian and Chinese satellites. I'd say Indian too, but India seems to have surrendered to Modi and the Knesset. Modi seems to have surrendered to Trump and the Knesset. But there's other companies too, you have private companies from other countries that are all got satellites up there. So you can't really do that anymore. And Trump is also trying to ban any coverage, video coverage of anything that's burning that isn't Iranian. Screaming that it's all artificial intelligence, it's all fake. It just makes you understand how desperate the regime in Washington has become. They have no idea how to get out of this. They have no idea what to do next. And it's all playing out. But you know what the biggest thing that's playing out, and there's got to be a lot of pressure on Vladimir, and something that Downing Street needs to take a real good gander at, along with everybody else, is the fact that Iran has smothered the American bases, splattered them across the Persian Gulf, 23 bases systematically destroyed. Believe me, that the casualties are at least tenfold of what the Americans are admitting, and have shown that, you know what, and we can do whatever we want and smack them back. And the pressure on Vladimir says, why are we doing as slow as we're going to be cautious in Ukraine? Look at Iran. It's blasting American bases left and right, and we're afraid to touch NATO. Why? Why are we afraid to touch NATO? Well, we can do the exact same thing and worse to the NATO bases. And that's something the NATO needs to wake the hell up, because sooner or later that pressure is going to be to the point where finally the gloves will come off. And that base in Poland, I wouldn't want to be there when the gloves finally come off. There's not going to be anything left alive in it. Estonia is going to overplay its hand and going to get smacked. The desire for vengeance is high after these 4 years, and with Iran showing that you can just smack these fires around and they can't really do anything. I mean, they can try to kill your population, but Russia has more than enough systems in place to fight that off. And the fact that Ukraine is now using British-made Flamingos, I don't know, Ukrainian, you know, they put a stamp on there and fuel them up in Ukraine, but that's about it. To strike deeper in, the pressure is just growing to finally take the gloves off and do what needs to be done, including destroying the supply chain that's feeding into the regime in Kyiv.
Yeah. Talking about the supply chain, I mean, that supply chain is going to be drying up now because the Americans need all their munitions for the Gulf, right? So, I mean, they've taken their THAAD missiles out of some of them out of South Korea already. There's kind of pictures, already in the press about that. Surely that's going to affect the amount of weapons. I mean, I know the Americans don't provide it. The Europeans buy it for Ukraine, but it's still American weapons, and they need it for the Gulf, right?
Well, the Flamingos, the Storm Shadow / Scalp missiles are European made. Now, having said that, there's quite a bit of American subcomponents in that, particularly chips, navigation processors, and so on. Europe has long ago lost any capability of creating modern weaponry in any kind of volume, and anything that's cutting edge, Europe is incapable of creating. Europe is When it comes to the arms race, if we're going to talk frankly, Europe is about 20, 30 years behind and has no chances of catching up at this point for very many reasons. The last attempt to build a fifth generation Eurofighter has fallen apart. There was a joint French-German project that split up and been canceled. Russia and America and China are working on sixth generation planes. Europe can't get a fifth generation plane up. Even if you look at even the Caesar system, artillery system, it was top of the line for its time. Its time passed about 15 years ago. You look at it now, it just looks antiquated compared to modern systems like the Russian systems that are coming out and more larger volumes. The way they're also automated loading, but I mean, you look at the smooth loading capacity. You look at this cranky system that has 100 places where it can break or jam, and it still has to have a lot of human participation. And you go, yeah, that's nice for like the 2000s, maybe 2010s, something like that, early 2010s. And it's the same thing for everything. There's very few categories in which Europe is even on par, let alone anywhere advanced. And if you take out the American parts, even the vaunted Gripen, which is Sweden's self-made plane, but it's a third or more. Actually, it's almost half. I was looking for the electronics and the subcomponents, almost half American parts. So you take that out, and what? You've got nothing. The same thing goes for the Poles, the Polish self-propelled artillery systems. They're assembled in Poland from subcomponents from three different countries. Poland doesn't manufacture it. It's an assembly job. Yeah, sure, they put very different systems together into one system that they've created, but it's not their, they can't manufacture that in Poland. They're incapable of doing that. And that goes across the board for all of Europe. Europe is, well, when it comes to military, it's basically second world, if we're going to be quite frank about it. The fleets are now a joke. I mean, the Queen of the Seas now has a smaller fleet than Russia. And Russia is a land power, has never tried to become a sea power. I mean, it had enough of a sea power to defend its coasts and defend its convoys, and that's it. Never the actual project power. So Europe, I mean, considering internal issues in Europe, considering on top of that, by energy needs and possible, there may be possible famines in Europe at the end of this year, something the most Europeans haven't woken up to. I mean, if we're going to talk realistically here, 40% of chemical fertilizers come out of Russia. Those are forbidden in Europe because it's Russian. And 30% of the urea, which is the majority of the chemical fertilizers, came out of where? They came out of Qatar, and there's nothing coming out of Qatar now. And even if tomorrow the Straits of Hormuz will be open, and they won't, even if they open up tomorrow, past fixing the damage to the facilities that Qatar's already suffered and probably will suffer a lot more before the end of this, just to put a gas liquefied gas plant back online is about a 3 week endeavor because you do it in phased phase switch on. You've got to check everything for pressure leaks and so on before you can rev it up. It's not just a flip the switch and everything goes again. So you're looking at several months before anything out of your, I mean, as anything out of the Persian Gulf comes out. The European chemical manufacturing for fertilizers all been shut down, or all the vast majority is shut down. And it's nothing new. They were shutting them down in 2018, 2019 because of stupid politicians who decided spot markets. Again, you suddenly understand politicians are in Europe are absolutely clueless about everything because they decided spot markets are cheaper than long-term contracts. Well, you may catch a spot market price that may be cheaper, but the point is spot markets are short-term emergency buys. That's why they're spot markets. There will always be, especially over long term, many times more expensive than long-term fixed-rate contracts. But okay, and then again, you also don't know what you're going to get on that market because this is what the overflow goes, and you do the spot buys versus something that's a guaranteed by pipe, volume that you're going to get every month. So all of this is going to play in. It's plowing season in Southern Europe. In about 2 weeks, maximum 3 weeks, will be plowing season in Northern Europe. And just frankly speaking, without without chemical fertilizer, you're looking at about 50% drop in yields. In some areas, 100% drop in yields, or close to enough to it, in more marginal lands. Food prices are going to skyrocket by midsummer, if not earlier, in Europe. And you may have, quite literally, you may have starvation. I'm not talking about individuals who have food poverty or fuel poverty, the way they have the British term for it, but seriously, mass starvation. I have a friend who's a poli-sci professor in Italy, who's telling me the average Italian is having a hard time feeding his family by week four of each month. And things are only getting worse. So if there's a big spike in food prices, you know, you can only imagine what it's going to be at that point. And when people start watching their kids go hungry and starve, that's when they, even if they're too lazy to move their bums off of a couch and do something about things going bad before, when the kids are hungry and screaming and crying, that really starts to motivate them to actually do something about it. And usually do something means take out the pitchforks and the torches and go burn government down. That's usually how hungry people react. I mean, we only have to watch the French Revolution, and not only, but that's the more famous one to get an idea of what may be coming down the road for Europe as a whole.
Yeah, well, I've long held the view that sort of European mainstream parties are in trouble politically as the war in Ukraine kind of grinds on, and you know, politicians keep saying we're winning when we're obviously kind of not winning. In fact, we're losing. And actually, the Europeans have doubled down on not buying Russian energy, which I mean, it's got nothing to do with Russia. It's just energy, you know. And it's crazy. I used to talk to a friend in Gazprom about spot markets, and he always just said to me, "We're not interested in that at all. We much prefer long term, you know, contracts, because the customer gets predictability, we get predictability, you know, and that sort of thing." It's fascinating. But with the war in Iran, I mean, that's a double whammy for energy prices. Brussels will cling on to not buying cheap Russian energy. Everybody else will. China will. India will. It's, you know, completely obvious. And the global energy price, in any case, will go up, you know, because situation in Iran. Is there any kind of hope for these Eurocrats, or should we just wait for the pitchfork brigade to turn up to get rid of them?
I wouldn't wait for the pitchfork brigade. I'd act now, because by the time the pitchfork brigades show up, everything's already collapsed. If you want to save anything, the only way you save it is to get rid of the people that created the problem. Then they're going to fix the problem. They are the problem. I mean, that's realistically, Europe is... Europe is not just America's strumpet. Europe in general, it's like a dysfunctional relationship where the abusive rapist husband who's cheating on his wife left and right finally gets sick and tired of having his wife at all, says, "I'm leaving. I got a better looking girlfriend over there." And the wife in desperation, who's accepted that I'm going to be beaten, abused, and robbed at every occasion by my husband, America, if anybody's not getting the analogy, in desperation to make the husband not leave, says, "I'm going to go to the neighbor. I'm going to throw myself at him, and he's going to kill me. I'm going to attack him, and he's going to wind up killing me. It'll be my blood will be on your hands, so you have to stay." That's the level of mentality of these Eurocrats. But then again, let's not forget the simple fact. They all have jobs waiting for them in America. At the end of the day, they're not going to stick around and watch the peasants squirm in the mud. They're going to leave. So the sooner that you get rid of them one way or the other, you know, depending on how humane you want to be, the better off you will be, and the more of a foundation you still have left to build something better on. If they stay to the very end till the pitchforks really come out, and it's not going to be much left. Everything's going to have to be rebuilt. I mean, this is the reality of it. The German Mittel Europe project that started in the 1880s is coming to its natural conclusion, a total collapse of all of Europe. I mean, the Germans have been working this, if you read German philosophers, German political philosophers, they were writing extensively that they were going to create a Middle Germany where they control everything. Hitler's, the European Union is the inherited child of Hitler's new European order, which itself didn't just appear out of nowhere, but the German Empire was kind of working in that, trying to create this Europe that is dependent on Germany in its own little confederation of pseudo-independent European countries, all dependent on the German Empire. So this is a third generation of the German Middle Europe project, and they finally got it. They didn't get it in World War One. They didn't get it in World War Two. They went about it financially, but it has the predictable results: death and destruction, just through internal decay in this case, and maybe through war again. It may be a third world war that destroys Europe fully, and we'll see what people can rebuild or not build over again. But you can't fix the system, because the problem is the system itself. You cannot fix the system that is rotten to the core through and through. You can only trash that house down, burn it, and then build on top of the foundation, if there's a foundation left. Waiting for that house to right itself, it's never going to right itself. It'll only continue to rot out and take as many people with it as it can when it collapses. That's the nature of things. But people have normalcy bias. Most of humanity has normalcy bias. This is what gets a lot of people killed in disasters. They sit there and they go, well, yesterday was okay, the day before was okay, today is okay, so tomorrow's got to be okay. Even if it's steadily going down, it's not going down so sharply that it hurts. So tomorrow's going to be okay. Well, that's no guarantee. You know, just as an example of normalcy bias, when the Fukushima earthquake happened, a lot of those Japanese villages and towns, they were in valleys. And it was just like a bowling alley. So when the wave came, it just kept building up force because it's pushed in by two rows of hills. And by the time it hits the ground, it's much stronger than it was before. There was one exception where a mayor who was already dead, but and I heard about him like 20 years earlier in a documentary. He'd survived something like that, and he built a 30-meter-tall seawall, and everybody laughed at him. And it was a waste of money because the standard was 10 meters tall. Well, that big wave came, like 2 meters of that wave went over the seawall, and nobody was even flooded out in a valley. Nobody suffered. Everybody else, all these other valleys were destroyed. Well, one of these valleys, so the Japanese are trying that normalcy bias. And when you're well-trained to behave, the Japanese are all trying to flee to get this gigantic traffic jam. And the wave came, just killed everybody. One car got out. It drove down the fields. Guess who was behind the wheel of that one car? That's right. It was a Russian. Russian tourists. They looked at that traffic jam, said, the hell with that. Drove off the road and just went up the fields while all the Japanese, well, you know, this is how it has to be because, you know, this is how society taught me to be. And I can't think outside the box. So I'm in a traffic jam. I'll just sit here and here comes the wave. Oh, well. And the mass casualties. But Europeans, I'm saying, are the same thing at this point. They're so taught to think within the box that they've been shoved into that even when you see that wave coming, and that wave is energy crisis, that wave is migration crisis, that wave is economic collapse, and that wave may be starvation. And they're just sitting in their car going, yep, that's a big wave, but I'm not going to see that wave. I don't want to see that wave. I'm just going to look the other direction.
Yeah, it's crazy. I'm fascinated by the AfD in Germany, which and actually the Rassemblement National in France. I mean, they seem much more kind of open about just having a normal relationship with Russia. Do you think that's real, or do you just think that's a kind of line? But they're still kind of horrible kind of new European order, hardliners to the core.
Well, I was talking to a couple of people who know things about this much better than I do, Germans, their attitude, and Russian Germans. What I've been told is at the grassroots, the AfD is like that. At the federal level, the AfD has been co-opted already. So is Front National. I mean, Front National already came out before that. We support Ukraine. We support giving weapons to Ukraine. We just don't support sending French soldiers to die in Ukraine. So they've already sold out well before that. Reform. You listen to Reform. I can't even say it's neocon light. It's full neocon. The only difference is, migration so far. Maybe even that'll go away. You're listening to it. It's just like listening to conservatives before that. So it's the same thing with AFD. They said, at the federal level, they're mostly bought out and they're mostly been normalized, which means they're basically no different than any of the other parties. The system, that's how the system works there. You cannot fix the system because the system is meant to be this broken. The system is meant to be in control of very few people that can modify anybody who goes in there or get rid of them one way or the other. So you've got a broken system that's meant to be broken, was broken by design. I mean, Europe, this European project is death by bureaucracy. That's why how you keep that was the theory anyways of how you keep the European countries from fighting each other or any conflict. We'll just strangle them with bureaucracy. Problem is when you strangle any government with bureaucracy, you strangle the economy, bureaucracy, strangle society with bureaucracy. And then when you allow people like the Greens and others in who were co-opted in their own time too. I mean, look, the biggest warmongers in the world are the Greens. Supposedly, let's save nature after we exterminate half of it and the human race too while we're at it. Because war is the only thing you hear from the Greens these days. And then not exactly Greens that are more like watermelon, green on the outside, red on the inside. In this case, red from war and blood. But that's the system. I mean, if you watch the system co-opt one group after another group after another group, you got to figure out that's the design of the system, is to co-opt and modify back into the norm of the system. So you either stay with it and go downhill with it, or you do something about it.
Now we're talking earlier about escalation with Europe and how, I mean, I said before when Biden was thinking about letting Ukraine have Tomahawk missiles, which in the end he decided he shouldn't do because Putin launched the Oreshnik, that the base in Poland may be a possible target, the next step up the escalation ladder. But one of the sort of thoughts I have is that, Putin, in some respects, he doesn't need to escalate with Europe because Europe is falling apart anyway. He's happy to kind of maintain a low attrition warfare in Ukraine while Europe collapses in on itself. Do you share that kind of view or not?
I think Russia could do much more to help Europe along its path, and it should, because again, Europe is doing everything it can to destroy Russia internally. So what comes around goes around. I don't like to say Europe because Russia is one third of Europe. Russia owns and has always owned the biggest chunk of Europe anybody's ever had. We were even in Kiev and Rus times, and before that, we were the biggest part of Europe, a European state anywhere. So I would say it's not Europe, it's the EU or the NATO bloc, whichever way you want to look at it. And even the EU is not the EU because, thankfully, I guess cultural differences do matter. The Austro-Hungarian bloc obviously has decided, nah, we're not interested in suicide pact number three. For we've been down this road, as Orban said, we've been down this road twice before. We're not going down a third time. Have fun, bye bye. We'll talk to you later if you survive. And the rest of the former, well, the majority of the former Austro-Hungarian Empire seems to be going in the same direction with the same mindset. Thanks. We may not like the Russians, but we don't want to fight them, and we can do business with them. If you psychos want to go exterminate yourself on the Russian tank treads, that's not our problem. That's your problem. But the Germans can't seem to break away from their Middle Europe concept, and they can't, and they still look at everything that's west of the Volga as their colonial space, their Lebensraum, which again wasn't something Hitler created. That was a mindset that was coming around back in the 1890s. Now they were looking at in all those areas as that's going to be our colonies. Well, no, it's not. That's thank you. That's claimed land for the last 2,000 years. That's one of those points, and I've made it many times. There is no Russian benefit from a united Europe, because whenever Europe starts to unite, it always starts looking east. It's always war for us. It's much better when you have individual nations you can deal with that are looking out for their own self-interest, not some elite self-interest that has nothing to do with their people's self-interest, but has to do with their glory and economic wealth and everything else for this elite, an Epstein elite. But again, I mean, seriously, we're dealing. Glenn Deason asked me about, I guess it was about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago. What do you think about, chances of making peace with the Europeans, with the European elite coming to some kind of conclusion over Ukraine? Like, how? I mean, look at the people who are sitting in power. These are the Epstein elites. I mean, we should never allow that nomenclature to slide into obscurity, because that is the very definition of who we're dealing with. These are people that will literally murder and eat the children of their own people. When you're getting to that level, everybody else is just, everybody else is just biomatter for these people. If their own nation is biomatter for them, what are they going to do to anybody else's nation? That's even lower on the run. I mean, this is the people we're dealing with. This is quite literally the elites in the West that we're dealing with. How do you speak to them? Well, either by throwing lots of money at them and being their vassal, or by putting a knife under their, or a dagger under their throat, and explain to them what else might happen. That's the only thing they understand, unfortunately to say. You can't negotiate with people like this. They're always looking how to get you one way or the other. It's better if they don't have to get you through war, put you on your knees through war and exploit you. But you know what? When there was an interesting little documentary I watched, I guess about 10 years ago. It was in Israel, and they were teaching a class on the Holocaust. And when they do that, it was 10th grade, I guess, Israeli school. They bring in a person who survived the Holocaust. Not that many of them left, but there's still some. And this old grandmother was sitting there listening to the class, and she asked them after the class, "So what did you learn?" It's like, yeah, you should respect other people. You shouldn't, mass murder. I guess the Israeli government didn't quite learn that. But, all these things. And she's like, no, you didn't learn anything. When someone tells you they want to kill you, you believe them. They may not have the capability of doing it right now, but they have the intent. So you have one of two choices: either grab your family and run, or grab your rifle and go and attack. All we hear in Russia from the leadership in the West is death to Russia. In oh so many words, they may not say death to Russia. We're going to break you economically. We're going to put you on your knees. We're going to, the French say, we're going to rip the Russian economy to shreds. Then you get the maps of, we're going to decolonize Russia. And they're like 10, 15, 20, 40 governments. Depends whose flights are fancy. You get the Finns, the Finnish nationalist groups that are basically in power now. Their fantasies of empire, some, the more modest ones just go out to Arkhangelsk, to the more insane ones. They're all insane, but the more insane ones, they claim everything out to Kamchatka. Like, 6 million Finns are going to fill in. Just that alone, it tells you how insane they are. But this is what you see, and this is what you hear from people in power. So that they don't have the capability right now doesn't mean they won't have the capability, say, in 5 years or 3 years or next year, depending what happens. Geopolitics works like that. Any internal problems in Russia, they will all jump on that instantly. So you're looking at an enemy that really wants to kill you. They just can't do it right now. So what is the Russian government supposed to do? What is Russian society supposed to do at this point? If they don't change, then they need to be changed. Preferably by their own people, but if not, then externally, because they have now, while screaming Russia's a threat, we want to destroy Russia, they made sure Russia will be a threat, because now you're really threatening Russia, like anybody else. If your neighbor constantly tells you, I'm going to come over your house and kill you, I'm going to come over your house and take all your furniture out of your house, I'm going to come over the house and break your family up, sooner or later you start to understand, even though he's saying that he hasn't done it, that he may do that. And then what's your choice? You arm up and maybe go over there and preempt him. But that's, Europe is going to create its own, or the European Union, NATO, is going to create its own downfall, because it's creating the conditions it supposedly fears by making sure that the other side keeps hearing, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill you, we're going to kill your children, we're going to kill your country, we're going to kill you. And that's what's heard constantly from the West. There's no, hey, maybe we can live together. We don't like each other. Put a wall up. You stay on your side. We say, you don't hear that. You constantly hear from the West, we've got to get them. We've got to get them. Hitler, by the way, when he went to the Reichstag, because after all, he was chancellor, so he had to at least go formally through that Republican process. And he's laid out his reasons for Barbarossa. his march to Dragana Host. The official reason was, any day now, Stalin's going to invade me, invade Europe. So we've got to get him first. And that's what, by the way, Russia knows its history quite well. It's seen this game before. And it's a question of, when they say Russia's going to invade us in 2 years, the read between the lines, so we're going to hit them in 1 year. And that's what's being understood in the Russian leadership, particularly the younger Russian leadership, the 50-somethings, 40-somethings that are going to be coming up into power in the next generation. That's what they're hearing. And that's what they're seeing. They don't have the same 1990s ties that other people had, with the mass corruption that was in Russia. These people, they don't have those ties with Europe. They're nationalists, and they're really upset. So again, either Europe changes its rhetoric and rethinks its position, or it's on a collision course off a cliff that it's not going to get back up off. Like it or not, that's what it is.
Yeah, no, I unfortunately agree with you, particularly that the kind of current leaders that we have are just incapable of having any sort of normal relationship with Russia, not von der Leyen, certainly not Starmer, not Merz, not Macron, although they may all be gone within the next 2 years, but we might all be gone within the next 2 years too. Hopefully we won't. But thank God for the Belgian Prime Minister who's come out to say, we should have a normalized relationship with Russia. I mean, good old Bart De Wever, he's probably my favorite European politician from a very short list, right now. I mean, what do you make of that? Is that playing in Russian media, that story?
That is playing in Russian media, but it's very timid the way it's playing still, because what happened to him instantly? Every other it's the Orban effect. You said what? Okay, you're enemy of the great project of Europe. Now we're gonna get rid of you as soon as possible. Now if he is staying power, that's something else. I mean, look, when Russian politicians look at Orban, they understand he's not an ally of Russia. He may become one day an ally of Russia. If it fits him, by the way, with Ukraine now, and that's another subject in a second. But he's looking at self-interest of his country. So he's predictable. Predictable is good in geopolitics. Predictable is great in geopolitics. He's predictable, so we know he's looking out for his country. We can understand what the values or what the needs of the country is. And we can come to some kind of conclusion on what we can, what we can arrange in some kind of a mutual exchange or something else, because we understand where you're coming from. We understand your ideology. We understand your needs. Okay, we can negotiate. When you're dealing with people who don't give a damn about their countries, they have some, the van der Leyens, the Merzes, and these other psychopaths. You can't deal with these people. I mean, on what common ground can you find except, oh, we're going to walk out in the middle of Red Square and all commit mass suicide. Will that be okay with you? Oh, okay. Well, we found common ground. How do you speak to people like that? You don't speak to people like that. They understand fear and they understand greed. And they don't give a damn about their own countries or the people in their countries. Orban, Fitzo, people like that. Yeah, you can deal with them. Czechoslovakia. I mean, people like that, you can understand, you can read them, you can understand what they want, and then you can come to some kind of conclusion, some kind of mutual agreement that's beneficial for all parties.
Babbage.
That's good. Babbage. That's it, Babbage. And that's the problem, by the way, with Trump, is you really can't figure out what the hell he wants or who's influencing him for this half hour. Who's the last one to whisper in his ear? Frick, man. You have to have some serious spy work just to keep the list of who's spoken his ear last to figure out what we're going to talk about next. That's political ambiguity that that Macron has prized and the Americans are now implementing is very bad in geopolitics. It's even worse when geopolitics has nuclear weapons. Is he going to go for a first strike? Because the logic of first strike, which America seems to be too stupid to understand, the politicians anyways, there's plenty of Americans that have been saying this, like McGregor and others. As long as you keep a first strike doctrine, even if I have a second strike doctrine, the logic, the military geopolitical logic I have is I'll exterminate you the first chance I have just to make sure you don't strike me first, because that's your official position, to strike me first. So it means the moment I'm weak enough, you're going to strike. So I've got to strike you. That's the reality of geopolitics. If everybody goes, that's a response only, nobody first strikes, everybody takes a deep breath. Okay, well, nobody's going to go nuclear, so okay, we can live with this. But if one guy is, you know, any day now, I'm just going to put a bullet in your head. Well, everybody's grabbing their rifles and going, as soon as it turns around, looks that way, I'm going to shoot him. You know, that's the reality of it. That's the reality of human nature. It's the reality of geopolitics.
Yeah.
So how do you deal with people like that?
Yeah, I mean, you will get rid of them, hopefully, through preferably through democratic means, you know, quite frankly. But on Orban, I agree with you, actually. And I went to Budapest twice last year. I mean, I actually think the whole Iran thing is going to kind of, and this ridiculous standoff with Zelensky, who I don't know what Zelensky's thinking over the Druzhba, you know, pipeline, quite frankly, it's idiotic. I mean, he just wants to buy time to kind of get Orban out of the way, you know, and get sort of Peter Magyar behind sanctions and everything else. $90 billion for the war, you know, effort. But I think the Iran war is just going to fix more in the minds of ordinary Hungarian people that Orban is probably on the right track. I mean, that's just my sense. I think the Iran war is just going to add to his appeal amongst ordinary Hungarian voters. That's just my sense of it. I mean, what's your sense?
Well, you know, I have a friend who's well connected, well up in the elites in Georgia. And I was having a talk with him. It's like the Georgian elites are in a panic because they're passive Russophobes because they're making money off this and all, but they're anti-Russian still somehow like that. And they're watching their benefactor have its teeth beaten into it down his throat on a daily basis. And starting to figure out that, oh, shit, America's not going to be here to protect us. Now, who do we have around us? We have Iran, who's, well, they're still far enough away and somewhat pissed off with Azerbaijan. Probably won't invade because Iran hasn't started a war in 200 years. America hasn't started a war in like 2 months. Or I'm sorry, they just
3 weeks.
You know, that's yeah, they haven't started a new war in 3 weeks. You know, the American standard. Screaming Iran is a threat. It's like looked in a mirror lately. The Turks who are looking at, and quite frankly, speaking of Georgia as former part of the Ottoman Empire, which the Georgians sure as hell don't want to be ever part of again. Or you have the Russians. So you know, you have to start thinking. Well, and if the Europeans were half as bright as the European elite as they try to make themselves out to be, at this point they would all be going, "Yeah, Uncle Sam ain't going to be there for us," and he's not. I would tell any European who's deluded enough to think that. If it ever comes to nuclear weapons, there is no way in hell the U.S. would sacrifice even Oklahoma City or Arkansas City, which are tiny little cities that's like 200,000 people, for London, for Paris, for Berlin, or any other European city, no matter what the population. It will never happen. You're on your own, gentlemen. We're out. Guaranteed 100%. America will never sacrifice any of its own land. For any what I mean, you know what the American jargon is for Western Europeans amongst the common people?
Go on.
It's not a pretty jargon. You're a trash. That's what they call Western Europeans. You're a trash. Welcome to reality. That's not even Eastern European. I don't know. You know, that's even worse. But for Western Europeans, if you talked about the average guy on the street in some small town that can barely read and write, he'll tell you they're a bunch of you're a trash. So believe me, America is not going to sacrifice any of its cities for any European country or any European city. That's the reality of it. So, and the Arabs just learned that. They've been told that for years. It's one thing to hear it. It's another thing to actually, you know, to accept it. And they're getting it accepted to them by hypersonic missiles and ballistic missiles. And I'll tell you, from what I've been told by very good sources, the Saudis have told the American military, go screw yourself. We're neutral. Survive however you survive. You know, we're not coming to aid you. We're not coming to get you off these bases. That's it. It's your problem, not ours. And that's, in their case, it's a smart thing to do, make sure their nation survives. So I would suggest for the European Union to start seriously looking at reality the way it is. The American Empire is much more of a paper target tiger than anybody wanted to believe. And if they go into stupid mode and land Marines on the northern shores of the Straits of Hormuz, I invite everybody to review a village called Krynki. Well, actually, there is no village called Krynki anymore. It's been razed down to the basements. And the Ukrainians lost two battalions of Marines that got turned into meat over a period of about 4 months, trying to hold that village after they grabbed it coming across the Dnieper River. This is just going to be writ large on there. So the Iranians are waiting. They want the Americans to land. They want a land operation, because then they're going to have the people in their hands to slaughter. And they've been preparing for this for 20 years. If the Americans are crazy enough to do that, that's going to be the end of Trump, period. I mean, and you can tell they're desperate when they're demanding the Chinese come in there as part of this armada to say to open the Straits of Hormuz. Well, China's getting oil out of Strait of Hormuz anyways. So did Pakistan just now had a tanker to go in. So it all depends whose side you're on. You know, that's kind of how it works. And they're demanding all the Europeans send whatever ships they can and dinghies and whatever else to open the straits. They're not doing it themselves, by the way, if you notice. It's too dangerous for us. It's your Euro vassals. You will go and die there for us. We'll just sit back and see what happens. I mean, that's basically what they're telling everybody. Oh, the French seem to want to send their 8 frigates out to become scrap metal. I mean, there's no survival chance coming across that those straits if the Iranians want to take you out. And considering you can do that with FPV drones with RPG rounds underneath them for, you know, a $3,000 drone, and send a couple hundred of them at once in a wave, you'll get through and do enough damage to maybe not sink a destroyer, but damn well damage it enough that it has to leave. And this is what, you know, you put up a couple hundred kids with VR goggles up under some trees up in the mountains. And the mountains are right there past the coast, and they're just playing a game. Let's see who gets through to the destroyer. Oh, one life done. Let's get the next one up. But that's the reality of modern technology. You know, when you're looking for the big missile launcher, you've got to worry about that 15-year-old kid whose parents you just murdered or whose brother or sister you just murdered. He's going for revenge. With that little joystick and a drone with an RPG round underneath it. That's the reality of modern combat.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I 100% agree. And the UK only has one ship. It seems a lot. And that took ages to deploy. And the scandal with that was that, you know, it kind of so many left. They were under huge pressure to say that it left Portsmouth, this one destroyer. All the others were in refit. All the five others were in refit, and it spent 4 days in the English Channel having more fixes done to it. It didn't even leave. It was still being fixed. It didn't go anywhere for 3 days. But it had to leave to set sail. It's quite remarkable. I mean, how can Trump? How can Trump get out? Can Trump get out of this now? I mean, you know, he has to find an up for him. More and more, even in the US, more and more politicians and media figures. Saying the Americans have to kind of find an off-ramp out of this, and the Iranians say, "Well, fuck it, we don't want to. Excuse my language. You know, we don't want to negotiate you with you now." So that means they just have to pull back or just carry on and just continue to get hammered. I mean, what can Trump do now, in your assessment?
I've got like 3 minutes. I gotta go.
No worries.
Another interview. Well. Look, he's screwed no matter what. And now it's just a question of how screwed is he? How screwed is he? Well, let's see. If he cuts and runs, he can declare, you know, get an aircraft carrier like Bush and declare mission accomplished. And Mega will probably buy that up, at least half a Mega. That's the Mega that's left that doesn't give a damn what Trump does because it's their guy. They'll buy it up. They'll buy up anything else he's spewed out. Yeah, of course, he's lost half his base that spat in his direction, turned around, walked off. The Republicans are still gonna lose and take a hammering in November, but maybe they can still pull something out. November is still 6 months off, basically. So there's still some chance that it may be a hammering, but not a total bloodbath. The longer he stays, the worse things get. And the faster everybody realizes the king's not only got no doesn't have any clothes on, he doesn't have any skin on him either. He's been skinned alive by the Iranians and everybody else. So at this point, how bad do you want it? Do you want to be gelded like a gelding? Or do you want to at least walk out with some manhood still hanging between your legs, to put it in a crude way? That's what the Americans have. They land troops on the ground. I mean, they got 2,000 men cut off in Iraq in three bases. These guys are running out of ammunition. They're going to be running out of provisions. You know, they don't want to talk about it. These guys are under fire constantly. They've been just left out to hang. The green zone's huge. It's being hammered. Their anti-aircraft system, their Phalanx systems, one of them was taken out by a drone yesterday, or the day before yesterday, I'm sorry. The same systems they put on ships. It's gone. They're getting hammered. And the Iraqi militias and basically army or Shia are fighting straight out. You're going into a hostile country to get them out. And the longer they hold, the bigger disaster this is going to be. I mean, I understand they want to, if you have to send an armored convoy, I don't know where they're going to send it from. Turkey is probably the only place. And they have to gather it fast enough. You send them in there to get these people out on buses, what have you. It's going to look really, really bad. But their hope is that this will all be over soon. But for some reason, this is not all going over. So if you don't get them out and they get slaughtered, or you see videos of corpses lying around and all these surrendered diplomats and everybody else, that's going to be a PR disaster from hell. And that might, Trump may not actually walk out of the White House a free man one of these days soon. I mean, it's just a matter of, you know, how much of a risk you want to take. But Trump seems to be the guy. I mean, he's been told he's the Messiah writ large, or the apostle of the Messiah. He's going to lead to Armageddon and all this other crap.
Well, there we go.
Christian Zionist heretics have beaten him to his head, and he loves being fawned over. So, you know, I don't know. He seems to be doubling down. He's flailing around. I mean, that's obvious enough. Cutting down, you know, freedom of the press, cutting down visuals, trying to strong arm everybody else to go die for him. All these other countries are going, yep, thanks, no. I don't think he has a way out, and he doesn't know what to do, because, you know, swallowing your pride and just basically cutting and running. Oh, and that'll also piss off the donor class, the donor owner class. Whoops. Because, you know, you'd have to cut and run with Aya from Israel, too.
Yeah.
The wage of sin.
I agree. Yeah, you screwed either way. I mean, I said that for a while as well. I completely agree. But anyway, you got a rush. Thanks so much, Stanislav, for joining today. As always, please subscribe to my channel if you find these conversations insightful. I personally thought that was fascinating in terms of the Russian sort of mindset, you know, right now. So as always, let's do this again soon. And thanks so much for joining today. And my name is Ian Pratt. I'm the Peacemonger. Thank you so much.